Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast. Back for another week and back with our alternative end-of-season awards show. The football, in a domestic sense, is mostly done. And we are ready to look back at the season and examine some of the things that maybe your standard awards ceremonies wouldn't quite give you. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host there. And I'm joined by the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai. How you doing, mate?
Thank you for saying almost over. I, like everyone else, is really looking forward to the La Liga 2 playoff final second leg between Levante and Alaves next Sunday.
Yeah. All right, mate.
You're not joking, are you? Steve.
No, I'm not joking either. No, I will also I think the Tercera season or the regional season in Spain goes on far longer into the summer. So we're not quite done yet. But yeah, mostly.
Of course, Norway's only really just started, hasn't it?
MLS is just beginning. It really is. It really is a summer of football if you want it to be there. And of course, we have the Women's World Cup to look through as well and get excited about. And of course, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones, getting excited about all the big movers and shakers this summer. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah, it's actually, the transfer window is opening as people are listening to this. So I think the transfer window opening date has been proved to be pretty much a waste of time. There's already been loads of transfers, so I'm not sure why that exists. There you go. It is officially opening now, so we can step it up. But yeah, there's it's absolute chaos already, isn't it? It's mental. We've already seen Messi go, and now we've got Mbappe. Where's this come from?
Well, this is it. I thought this is probably where we should start today's episode, because in the early hours, of Tuesday morning, the late hours of Monday night, depending on how you look at this and where you are in the world, I suppose, there was another twist in the eternal Kylian Mbappe to Real Madrid merry-go-round. Paris versus Perez. What are we on, V5 at this point? So it looks like Kylian Mbappe is not going to activate the extra year in his contract, and therefore his contract with PSG would be up next summer in 2024. Now, PSG have zero interest, apparently, in losing him for free. And so, therefore, does look like potentially Kylian Mbappe is back on the market. Dean, it feels like it was coming, right?
I mean, I thought this was the case a couple of years ago. We were all set for it, weren't we? Then he announced his extension. It was even last year. I'm totally lost of time. Last year. And then, you know, he's standing on the shirt with a Mbappe 2025 shirt. He's decided that ain't going to be a thing. Potentially 2024. But as you say, PSG would rather he went now if that was the case. He sent them a letter to tell them he won't be staying. That's nice of him, because they weren't expecting it. Oh, a surprise post is a very rare thing these days. So it's usually
mostly
not
a tax
news
bill.
If you do get
some. Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah, nothing ever good comes in the post, and this is proof.
Yeah, you really don't get much good in the post. When I was younger, I used to do this thing where I would just like write to loads of football clubs, and I would say, I'm a new football fan, and I'm trying to decide which team to support. Could you send me some things about your club to help me with your decision? And like throughout the next couple of months, I'd every now and then just get a random package through the door, and it'd be like an Everton program or like a Liverpool. I wasn't Liverpool. I didn't write to them, but Man United scarf. Like all the clubs used to send something. Like that was proper surprise post. I loved it every time the postman came. I was like, "What have they sent me?" It might be.
Did
an
you come up with surprise and secret shirts? Was it you that came up with it in like 1990?
No one ever sent me a surprise shirt. I used to get like signed photos. I used to get like a card from the squad. I might try it again. Actually, maybe that's something I might try for next season. I'm going to write to all the clubs and I'll let you all know what we get through the post. But yeah, I mean, obviously, landing spots for Mbappe are few and far between. In the Premier League, there aren't many. Real Madrid's the most obvious one. By the time people are listening to this, this story would have been backwards and forwards about 100 times, because this morning alone, it's been like, Chelsea are leading the race for Mbappe. No, Chelsea are not interested in signing Kylian Mbappe. Real Madrid are interested. Man United might be interested if this takeover goes through. It's like, okay, let's all just calm down for a second. He's literally just sent the letter. But it's exciting because PSG have fallen apart, and as a result, we've got these big names making big moves.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, I do worry about this move. Obviously, the links to Real Madrid have been there forever, and I can completely understand the concept of Mbappe also watching Erling Haaland win the Champions League and the treble, and thinking, "Oh God, maybe the big Norwegian meat machine is going to overtake me." So I can understand the trepidations there around that, and therefore the desire to maybe move onwards. But I would say that Real Madrid feels like an awkward fit as far as I'm concerned. He spent the last couple of years telling everyone he's not a number nine, not a striker, doesn't want to play through the middle on his own. And he's more comfortable off the left, where Real Madrid have their best player in Vinicius Junior, who's about to take the number 7 shirt. That has been vacant, I suppose. It hasn't been. Eden Hazard's had it, but he hasn't actually worn it very much. it does feel like a strange...
Did Mariano Diaz have it at some point? Come on,
Mariano
mate.
Mariano had it at some point. Yeah, it has. Yeah, it's had a lot of owners. None have really paid up to its legacy, I suppose. Cristiano Ronaldo has a habit of doing this. Man United's number 7s after he left were rubbish. Real Madrid's number 7s have been rubbish. It's a bit like when Voldemort was turned down for the defence against the Dark Arts job at Hogwarts and they put a curse on it. It does feel a little bit down those kind of paths. Anyway, the point is that where Mbappe fits into this Real Madrid team doesn't feel obvious right now. And that presents a potential problem.
Yeah, I mean, if he's true to his word and he wants to play off the left, then there's one of the very, very, very few people in world football that can hold a candle to Mbappe's ability on the left wing already present at Real Madrid, as you say. And he's just taken the 7 shirt. So it is a slightly awkward fit. The problem for Mbappe is if he's decided he doesn't want to be at PSG, as Dean says, there aren't really very many clubs in the world that can afford this kind of deal. And even if another club, like let's say, for example, and yeah, this doesn't sound quite fair, but Liverpool, having missed out on the Champions League, are presumably not eligible for Kylian Mbappe. Yeah. So, but like, if Liverpool tried really, really, really hard, they might be able to cobble together something that could attract Mbappe. But he'd still say no because they're not in the Champions League, which means we're genuinely looking at, for a player at this price and this wage and this status, it's a short list of like 4, maybe 3, possibly 2, or maybe it's just Real Madrid. And so he's backed himself into a bit of a corner here, I think. You know, going so sort of public and so firm on it, and obviously, you know, frankly, just declining the Real Madrid move to start with, you know, on a free transfer when it was right there for him. This is interesting, and I'm not convinced it ends well for him, just because I can't really see a massive solution for him. Nothing's really leaping out to me. Correct me if you guys have spotted something, but I just can't see like perfect, he slides in there. I can't see it anywhere in the world.
Barcelona.
And what actually boggles my mind, they can't afford him.
No, they can't. But if they could, that's actually the place where his profile fits best, I think.
Great, yeah. But sadly, they can't afford him, really. What boggles my mind is that in the space of one summer, all three of them might leave. Neymar persistently linked with a move away. Saudi Arabia links, Newcastle, all sorts of stuff. Mbappe now trying to force a move, and Messi already gone. The Messi, Neymar, Mbappe trident might all depart in the space of 2 months, which is mad, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they said they wanted to rebuild. There you go. I'm not sure this is what they had in mind. But they were looking to rebuild around Mbappe, weren't they? There was all this talk about, you know, they were going to sign players from the Paris region and, like, get a new identity to this team. I mean, there's been no signs of them actually signing players from Paris up to this point. But that was the message that was coming out. But now they're just losing another one. Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, Real Madrid still remains the most obvious place. Florentino Perez recently said that they would sign Mbappe one day. He said it won't be this summer, but that was before this happened. And they're not really going to let an opportunity like this go by without giving it a go. I know Mbappe ideally doesn't want to play through the middle, but he's just going to have to. It's going to be no choice. Like, he's going to have to.
Can he play off the right? Rodrigo up front, or Firmino, you know, sign Firmino on a free and be a facilitator, and Mbappe moves to the right.
Be quite nice.
It's not perfect, but, like, if he wants to play wide, not through the middle, like, is that an option? Yeah.
Possibly. I also don't see why he just can't play through the middle. I really don't. You know, we all have our ideal scenarios.
Because the space is out wide. That's why.
Yeah. If he's going to force himself into this situation, though, he's got to have thought of the repercussions of it and what's, you know, how this is going to be able to open up. And, you know, he must also know that Vinicius plays in that spot. So, it should be pretty obvious.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, it's a very interesting summer at PSG. I think it's one of those ones that we've got to be keeping an eye on in pretty much all occasions. Because if they do go, then this is set up for a massive rebuild. And how they kind of approach that. We know that there's interest in Bernardo Silva. We've already spoken about that. It doesn't feel like that move for Hugo Ekitike has worked out. Whether he'll be moved on this summer or not is a different question. Or, you know, he hasn't been given that many opportunities. And I think that's probably, it would be unfair to judge him on this period. But whether they think that he is now the man that they can rely on to lead a new era forward, I have my doubts at this point. Whether he is or not, whether PSG would actually pursue that kind of project. So what this front line looks like next season is anybody's guess, right?
Yeah, and how are you supposed to get a manager in? How are PSG supposed to attract and acquire a manager of the caliber that they would see as befitting PSG? So one of the very best in the world. You know, we're talking about someone like, you know, Nagelsmann. If they can't really say to him, like, is that what's my forward line going to be? And they go, I don't know, mate. Really, we'll have to see. What do you mean we'll have to see? Like, that's not really how it works, is it? If you're being courted by PSG, like, how can you not know what your front line looks like? It's remarkable. This is a bit of a rebuild, you know. Ramos is seemingly going to go. They're going to lose a couple of others. If that entire front three goes as well. I know they did sort of skew towards youth last summer when they signed, you know, Vitinha, and they got younger in midfield, and they're looking at, you know, Kang-in Lee, reportedly, who's obviously, you know, under 23. They are skewing younger. I get it. But, like, PSG's ambitions and their actions aren't really lining up right now. And Mbappe, you know, trying to leave really underlines that point. So I don't know. I don't know, like, how they're supposed to get their ducks in a row and attract a manager under these circumstances. How can you really carry out these negotiations with any clarity?
Yeah, it's going to be very, very difficult. Yeah, I agree with you. I think the midfield looks quite strong now in terms of profiles and how they look going forward, especially if Ugarte does go through and it does come off. The defence, I think losing Ramos and bringing Skriniar is not a particularly poor trade. That's fine. That works out quite nicely for me. It's just a question of how it looks in this front line. And that's going to be a question that bombards the entire summer before they even think about who's going to manage this team. So it's going to be one we'll be keeping an eye on, DJ.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll be doing transfer shows throughout the summer. A few of them here, not every week we won't be doing transfers, but I imagine a fair bit of it will be. But on Patreon, there's going to be a lot of transfer stuff. So, yeah, if you want your transfer field, get over there. And when anything breaks like this, we will try to jump on and just assess each situation as they come and go.
Absolutely. The link is in the description as ever. Right after the break, we are going to be going into our alternative awards for this season. So don't go anywhere.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie. I'm Margot Robbie and I play Barbie.
And I'm Ryan Gosling and I play Ken.
Max is now the exclusive streaming home of Barbie.
So cool.
And the Max with ads plan is included with your Cricket $60 unlimited plan at no additional cost. Log in with your Cricket username and password to experience Max on all your favorite devices.
This is the best day ever.
It is the best day ever.
Don't miss Barbie now streaming on Max. Phone plan streams in standard definition. Programming subject to change. Fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See cricketwireless.com for details.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Welcome back to the Ranks FC end of season awards. And I guarantee you won't get some of these categories at the PFA ceremony. So we're going to start with Dean Jones, who's gone for coolest player.
The coolest player of 2023. This should probably be a real award, I think. This matters in football. You want to have your own brand as well as your team brand. And I've gone for coolest player of 2023 as Jack Grealish. If I had to choose to be a footballer right now, I think I'd just want to be Jack Grealish. Like, he always looks good. He's like down to earth. Like, he's a regular lad. He loves a drink, quite clearly. He's brilliant at what he does. He's just won the treble. He can have pretty much any girl he wants. He's stylish. He's relatable, which I think is really good thing about him. He's quite endearing. Yeah, someone I just think, like, if I was a player, this is who I would want to be. He's got a bit of everything. I'm not saying it's all ideal. I mean, the drinking things have got a little bit out of hand the last few days. For a
he's having a good time.
But we're going to, like, he's not going to win the treble many times in his life. But I would probably be doing the same thing. And yeah, I'm not saying drinking is cool, but Jack Grealish is so cool. Like, he dresses cool. His hair is cool. He's got a bit of everything about him. Yeah, I just imagine, like, whenever he, like, on a night out, he's clearly front and center. We've all got a mate who's front and center of a night out. Sometimes they're not that cool. Sometimes they are just loud and insist that they get the attention they want. But Jack Grealish, I imagine that everyone's, like, perfectly happy to go along for it most of the time, that he is the coolest guy in the room, so let him do what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, it was just loads of fun, wasn't it? It was iconic, what we've seen from this weekend. I enjoyed some of the interviews where he was like, I haven't slept in 3 days. I was like, I actually bang on relate to this man. Yeah, no, exactly. I really enjoy it. And I think that there's an element of these days where we talk about footballers and we talk about them looking after themselves. And there's always these, you know, different bits about who's great. And I read a brilliant piece by Joel Golby the other day. It was basically like Jack Grealish is the soul of this Manchester City team in a team where, you know, there's little bits to cling on to in certain regards, and they're just so polished and so good that actually at times it feels so kind of drilled in that they're just going to win and win and win. And Grealish is kind of the opposite of that. He's just like your mate who's out there who's just unbelievably good at football, and you're like, oh yeah, you can imagine him just popping down for a five-a-side with his mates when he's back home over the summer. You can imagine, you know, just sitting in the local pub having a few beers. And I do think there's an element of that where, you know, Erling Haaland basically being like, he's the most incredible athlete that maybe the world has seen in a long time. And what we're seeing from him, where he's like to Grealish, don't go out drinking, come and sit in his ice bath. And Jack's like, sharp, mate. And I think that that kind of dichotomy and that the duality of that relationship is really important for, you know, just remembering that these are people. And the point is that Joel Golby was raising in this article, he was like, I've seen people recently being like, what would have happened? How good a career could Ronaldinho have had if he didn't
who wasn't going out drinking, like, this is Ronaldinho. He's one of the greatest players of all time. What do you mean, how good a career could he have had? He was the eternal trickster, right? Like the kind of smiling devil. And so much of that was so part of his character and wrapped into it that it's made him what he was. And I think very similarly about Grealish, you know, he is not going to ever be, and he can't, and he said that he won't ever be that person who's in the gym at 8 a.m. loving it. But he's like, I work out how to balance these things, and watching him succeed this season has been a joy and a delight as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, definitely. Look, in terms of like the way he looks after himself, generally, he's got him. You can't be in a Pep Guardiola team as regularly as he is if you are not physically capable and like doing your hard work in the gym at the same time as you're having a good time of things. And it's about finding that balance. I mean, there's definitely like elements of his personality. You can see back when Gazza was like emerging as a clown of the England team, like there are definitely some times when you look at Grealish and you're like, he is just like the modern day Gazza in many aspects, but he's got that extra bit of desire with his career probably that, and the focus that perhaps Gazza could just never get. And in Guardiola, he's got the perfect man to make sure that he stays on the straight and narrow. So after this little bender that he's been on, he'll have
to report
refocus
to England now.
Yeah, I'm not sure how he's going to manage that.
Southgate's got the five City players that are English all reporting in the next 2 days. And he said, I'll have a look at them and see if they're good to play the first game. Trust me, they won't be.
And they shouldn't be. They should be allowed to wind down for this moment. But yeah, Jack Grealish, man, he's just so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy this and I like it and I'm happy for Jack. So I'm willing to accept this trophy being given out. We will send Jack his trophy in the post. Ranks FC coolest player of the season, 22-23. Over to you, Sam, for most dramatic player. Jack Grealish. No.
It's Jack Grealish. I mean, it could be Jack Grealish. But I think if you're looking at pure drama here, you're not just looking at positive vibes. You're looking at a mix of positive and negative. And I think that there has been no more dramatic footballer in 2022-23 than Gio Reyna. He turned the USA's World Cup campaign into a mini soap opera. Despite them being a genuinely successful team at that tournament and having all the good stories in the world on the pitch, somehow it was still overshadowed by one man only playing about 50 minutes. He nearly got sent home from the tournament, mid-tournament, for poor training levels. There was apparently a captain's meeting with the manager to discuss whether or not he should be sent home. Decided not to, and he apologised to the team. His parents got involved. They complained to the US Federation about Gio's playing time and said that it wasn't enough. When the coach, Greg Berhalter, decided not to budge, a longtime friend of his, Gio Reyna's dad and mum, decided to report an incident of domestic violence pertaining to Greg Berhalter from 1991 as some kind of weird retribution for not starting him in the World Cup. He came back, tried to put it all, you know, water under the bridge, let's move on. But the drama kept following him, guys. Late winner in a 4-3 win over Augsburg, basically as soon as he returned from the World Cup. 92nd minute winner against Mainz. A 95th minute assist on the final day to level it. Everything that Reyna did in the second half of the season following the soap opera of the World Cup was dripping in drama. He couldn't just score a normal goal in like the 50th minute to make it 2-0. That was impossible for Gio Reyna. Everything he did had to be in the 92nd, 93rd, 94th, 95th minute. Had to be a winner, had to be an equaliser. On top of what happened over the course of the Qatar events, I don't see it any other way. Gio Reyna is his own TV show.
it was dramatic, that is fair.
It has been very dramatic. I completely agree.
Hasn't played a lot of football, really, considering.
No. Like, he's had his moments, hasn't he? He's had those really good moments and really tough ones. It's felt like a lot this season for Gio Reyna. And
it's been a lot.
And I think he's going to have to, you know, find a space next year to step up. And if he wants to, you know, be a mainstay of that USMNT team, then he needs to find a space to become a mainstay within this Dortmund team first, I think. And there's a lot going on all the time around him. But I do appreciate that, you know, some of that is out of his control. Yep. But he has been incredibly good dramatic value. It has been a soap opera of the season for Gio Reyna.
Yeah, so here's hoping on Gio Reyna's behalf for just a totally normal 2023-24 campaign. Let's just go with 2,000 minutes, some pretty normal goals and nothing else, yeah? Go on, Gio, take a step forward. We're all rooting for you here because we want you to succeed. We want you to just have a normal, normal year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Okie dokie. Right, let's go on to the third award, which I'm going to give out to the most watchable team in Europe this season. And as per, I have a couple of honourable mentions. One of them will feel very familiar. Borussia Dortmund have been as watchable as ever in both senses of the word. Now, obviously, this campaign has ended in brutal disappointment with them missing out on the title with it in their own hands on the final day. But by God, they made this interesting. They made it exciting. And they were loads of fun to watch. They absolutely put teams to the sword. They, you know, flew through sides when they finally got to that iteration of Alaire, Adeyemi, and Daniel Marlin as a front three. And they were heaps of fun until the final day where it all just got too much. So an honourable mention for Borussia Dortmund and an honourable mention for Toulouse, who came 13th in Liga. So this might be a bit of a surprise shout for some people. But they got promoted. They won the French Cup. And they've just been like sort of genuinely loads of fun. They've beaten some big sides. They've beaten the likes of Monaco on the final day of the season. They beat Auxerre 5-0. They lost 6-1 to Marseille. They, you know, won 4-2 against Montpellier. They've put up some big score lines this season. And also they have some really, really fun players. For a team that were promoted from Ligue 2 last year to finish 13th, win the cup, and play some really exciting young talent. Branko van der Boomen has been there for a while now. I think he's going to be joining Ajax at the end of the summer, but he's been an absolute creative force. Rhys Healy, the Englishman who's decided to spend his time wandering through the lower leagues and then going out to Toulouse and being an absolute superstar for them as they've gone onwards, has been remarkable as well. They've been loads of fun. It's a really diverse, niche squad. They've got a really cool analytics department behind them. And I'm really excited about watching Toulouse play more football and play Europa League football, obviously, after winning that cup next year. So shout out to Toulouse. But I think that the most watchable team in Europe this season have been Napoli.
What a shock.
What a shock. What a surprise. What a fun. What a ha-ha. But yes, I think that when it comes to the punch, Napoli have just been fundamentally sensational from start to finish. And I think that with the end of the campaign, with the Champions League fall off, with that loss to Milan, with the big loss in the league to Milan, and the fact that they kind of struggled to get over the line a little bit towards the end, people have forgotten just how scintillating Napoli were before the World Cup. And you know, equally in Serie A, in that sort of second spell of the season too. But the way that they started this season, the way that they tore teams apart in the Champions League, watching Kvaratskhelia and Osimhen in full flow together, watching Anguissa burst through midfield, watching Kim Min-jae literally step up and become one of the best centre-backs in Europe in his first season in a top five league. Even the likes of the old guard, you know, Gio Di Lorenzo, Mario Rui, who had a really weirdly good season. They were just great to watch. Great fun watching all sorts of bits and bobs come together, seeing them score bangers from distance, seeing Lobotka sort of ease himself into that number six role and become one of the best in the world at it. It's just been brilliant to watch from start to finish. And Napoli going and winning the Scudetto for the first time in 33 years, on top of everything else, I think puts the cherry on top of this cake. The most watchable team in Europe, the best side to watch in full flow, Napoli.
I feel like I didn't watch enough of them. That's my problem. I didn't see enough of Napoli, and I feel like I've missed it.
You missed it now, mate. Spalletti's gone. Like, this is a genie in a bottle season where it all came together in outrageous circumstances as well, given the players they lost over the summer.
It was glorious.
And as Jack says, they've just been like Yeah, it was just brilliant. So we won't see that again, mate. We'll have to we'll get you it on tape. Yeah, we'll get you a VHS.
Yeah, yeah. If you send me a video of the season, that'd be great. I'll watch that.
Season review VHS 2022.
Right. Why don't you write
goals
galore? Why don't you
write to
write to Napoli and see if they'll send you a DVD for the season to try and give it. There you go. Pretend you're Dylan and write to them and be like, I'm thinking of becoming
a Napoli
fan.
That is a great idea.
Can you send me a DVD of this season?
Dylan is the way into this idea, isn't it?
Had you not already figured that out, that Dylan was clear?
Yeah,
I really thought.
No, I was just going to say it was from Dean.
I thought it was unspoken that this would all be done via Dylan, your 5-year-old.
From Dean, age 9.
The 40-year-old.
Right, let's go onwards and back to you, DJ, for worst decision maker.
Yeah, so the worst decision maker of the 22-23 season was Kalidou Koulibaly. He was linked with the Premier League for about 3 years.
Oh.
And then he decided to come in the season when Napoli went on to storm Serie A, as Jack has just described. He's missed out on what Jack has just described as like the best football you could basically have watched all season. He could have been part of that. He could have been standing in that defence watching that happen in front of him. Instead, he was part of the worst Chelsea team in basically 20 years. Went so badly. They finished in the bottom half of the table, below Fulham and Brentford, the teams down the road that they're supposed to not even care about. A terrible season for him at Chelsea. And now he's seeking a move back to Italy. Well, to be honest, mate, you should probably stay where you are for a bit and try and settle, because Chelsea might be about to become good again. And wherever you go in Italy, I'm a little bit worried that whoever you pick in here might be about to have a bad season. So I reckon Koulibaly needs to be careful he doesn't win this award next year as well. It's a strange old narrative this week, one for Koulibaly. But at the time, I could see the sense in it. Tuchel was manager. Looked like Chelsea were going to have a good season. There was no reason to believe it wouldn't be. But he's played a part. He didn't settle, and he played a part in Chelsea being rubbish. And he really did make the worst decision in the whole of world football by leaving Napoli at the start of last season to join the rubbish Chelsea team that we saw.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. It's absolutely fair enough. I can't think of a worse transfer, I'll be honest.
I couldn't think of a contender. I couldn't think of anyone.
Lorenzo Insigne
I've got a worse transfer.
Because Toronto are dreadful. So Lorenzo Insigne might be in this conversation. The
Neapolitan
captain leaving his hometown side to go to Toronto just being an absolute car crash is right up there with this one. But it's very similar vibes. Sam, was that what you were going to go for? Or have you got another one?
Well, I've got an award for most pointless transfer, which is slightly different, of course. Worst is different to pointless. Koulibaly, I really can't think of anybody who has made a worse decision there. Although let's be clear, like none of us can see the future. None of us expected it to go like this. This is just how life goes sometimes. But I've got a most pointless transfer for you, and it's my old favourite punching bag, Arthur. Arthur to Liverpool.
Oh, God.
Absolutely pointless. I mean, this happened. This genuinely happened. They paid £5 million in wages to Arthur this year for 13 minutes in the Champions League, zero in the Premier League, nothing in the FA Cup, nothing in the Carabao Cup, but he did get 63 minutes in the EFL Trophy. That's not the Carabao Cup. That's a different tournament, and it is worse. Now, he did have to have surgery halfway through the season, and he missed a chunk of time. So I do have a little bit of sympathy for him. But then again, I don't have any sympathy for Liverpool because he's a very injury-prone player. He always has. So if the headline is injury-prone player gets injured, I'm not stunned. I'm not shocked. Here's a thought exercise for you. And this is why it genuinely irritates me, right? Because I get it. Like, Liverpool needed a midfielder in the summer. They ran out of options and they got Arthur in. Oh, it's a loan. It's fine. It's £5 million down the drain. If Arthur had stayed fit, would Stefan Bajcetic have emerged? Mm-hmm. If Arthur was taking that spot on the bench, would Bajcetic have got the first team look? It's possible the answer is no. And that underlines how damaging these transfers can be. Liverpool panicked. They ran out of options. They possibly ran out of money. And they just thought they needed a midfielder. And they took Artur, who we called at the time, this is an awful move. He's not good enough to play for Liverpool. He doesn't suit Klopp at all. Why have you done this? This is stupid. We put it in our worst three transfers last summer. And it's proved the case. 13 senior minutes. But it runs the risk of not only being a waste of money, but a waste of opportunity for someone like Bajcetic. And in a way, Liverpool are lucky that Artur had to miss some time, because it did mean that Bajcetic was able to emerge and he didn't block the pathway. So I think this was an awful move, which it could have gone even worse.
Yeah, right. That was pointless. You're right. It did. They didn't achieve anything from it. Nothing. Good at all.
5 million down the drain. 13 minutes in the Champions League. Nearly stopped by Bajcetic from emerging. It's bad stuff. It's really bad stuff.
Yeah. Go on, Liverpool. Okay.
Yeah, well, there you go. That was. I agree. That was the most pointless transfer of the year. I thought there might be some other ones in here, but I'm struggling to think of one with less impact.
I've got one honourable mention if you want it.
Yeah,
Jan like Bednarek it. Went on loan to Villa. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, that
I
happened.
Don't know why that happened. He was sent back in January. It was literally no point in any of it.
Yeah, that was bad actually. Sorry, yeah, that one didn't go to plan. Jan Bednarek to Villa. Yeah. I'm sure that loads of teams are screaming. There's loads of people screaming at their headphones right now, being like, what do you mean you've forgotten this one? But I am struggling to think of anything more pointless than Artur to Liverpool. So, yes, very good, Sam. Very good. Right, my next award goes to the biggest chaos agent of the season. And I would like to hand this award to Girona in La Liga. They finished 10th.
Oh, lovely.
They finished 10th in La Liga, which is brilliant considering they were promoted via the playoffs from the Segunda last year. Girona have been the absolute epitome of take from the rich and give to the poor. They have taken points this season off Barcelona, Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, Osasuna, Athletic Club and Mallorca, which is 7 of 9 teams above them. They have given points to the likes of Espanyol, Getafe, Valencia, Almeria, Celta Vigo, all who were involved in the last day relegation scrap. It has been madness. Like, frankly, one of the most bizarre seasons I have ever seen. They have won games that they shouldn't have won. They beat Real Madrid 4-2 to basically secure the title for Barcelona back at the end of April in a game where Tati Castellanos scored his first league goals for the club. He scored all four in a 4-2 win over Real Madrid in April after he signed in August. And this is basically the story of their campaign. They make absolutely no sense. They were knocked out in the second round of the Copa del Rey to Casareño, who basically play in the third or fourth tier of the Spanish pyramid. They have made no sense all season, but they have been an absolute heap of fun. I have enjoyed watching them immensely, and I'm really, really glad that they are going to be back in La Liga next season. Fair play to Girona.
Sounds like it could have been the Robin Hood Award as well.
Yeah, I thought they were quite similar vibes, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is a side that lots of people like, but there's a lot of loanees in here, right? I think of the kind of starting 11 or the players that have come in, there's five, maybe six players here who are on loan. So it's going to be very interesting to see which ones of these are made permanent and how they deal with that next season. But it's been a heap of fun. And I just wanted to give them a shout out because that's definitely the kind of thing that we've gone under the radar. And they have been gloriously chaotic.
But remember, of course, you know, with the squad turnover, they are part of the City Football Group. So they will find players from somewhere if they need them. They'll be all right.
Yeah, I agree. Okie dokie. Dean, your final award for today is nicest person.
Yeah, so nicest person. I was feeling very happy when we were like chatting over WhatsApp. And I was like, oh, I'm going to... The nicest person, you know. I wanted to.
What are we doing? When Jack said you won't find these awards at the PFA ceremony, on this occasion, it's and rightly so.
No, this is something that should be given out because we should be praising people for being nice. Now, actually, when I thought about this a bit more, the person that I've decided to give this to is so unexpected that actually I'm going to rename it the Most Improved Person Award. Because in football, obviously, like when you're especially younger, you know, they give out all sorts of awards just to make sure that more kids are motivated to keep playing, and you get the Most Improved Player Award. And that's fine, because as kids, you do genuinely improve and you want to strive to get better. This person seems to have become a better person. So the nicest person of 2023 is Graham Souness. You didn't see this coming.
I did not see this coming.
Now, for those that don't know much about Souness, he is a hardened old Scottish professional footballer who made his name at Liverpool and Rangers in the 1980s. But he's been a pundit for a long time on our TVs here in England and on Sky. He's like to get stuck into people. He's been pretty miserable a lot of the time. He loves to dig people out, especially Paul Pogba. And he really hasn't had much fun. Anyway. Seemed like, yeah, fine, just a miserable, aging man until recently. So he recently left Sky Sports, and he's been appearing on news channels. And this is getting a little deep. We don't usually go into this sort of territory and ranks, but this is why he deserves commending here. And he started to talk about a fundraising campaign that he's become part of. Now, he's basically part of a charity seeking a cure for epidermolysis bullosa, which is basically easier described as a really rare medical condition that results in like blistering of the skin. It causes the skin to blister and tear at even the slightest touch. And people that have it, as I say, extremely rare, but it affects your hands and feet or any part of the body. And basically, Graham Souness, 5 years ago, came across this girl, she's now 14, who had this case, and her life is so miserable and uncomfortable and painful. She basically has open wounds over her whole body that they have to wrap constantly, and there's always part of her that hurts. I've seen her on various news channels over the past few months. Graham Souness has been on these news channels with tears just running down his face as he talks about her and talks about how he wants to raise awareness of her and how it's basically turned him into a bit of a soft guy. Like, Graham Souness did have a soft underbelly between that hard, tough Scottish skin. And I like to see this. Graham Souness, after all these years, when he stuck that flag in the turf at Galatasaray and he caused basically a war across Turkey. He's a nice guy. Now he's gonna swim the English Channel. He's going to try to raise over £1 million for the charity to help this girl and this horrible condition that she suffers from. And I was reading this last night a bit more, and it dawned on me. I was thinking, who is my nicest person to be? And I literally was just like, was flicking through a news app, and the story popped up. And I was like, oh yeah, Graham Souness is now a really nice guy. I like this. I like that people are caring even when we think that they're not. And so, as a result of that, Graham Souness is getting the Nicest Man of the Year award.
Okay. Yeah, I'm willing to accept this. I was a bit confused when you said it, I'll be honest. It wasn't what I was expecting, but I think that
it flies in the face of the man you thought he was.
Yeah, no, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. So fair play. I think you've done very well there, Dean, and described that very nicely. Yeah. So fair play to you and fair play to Souness for his work in that regard. Right, we're going to change tack a little bit from niceties and go to Sam, whose final award is biggest puncher, and this is not who's had the most knockouts in a game of football this season. It's the disparity, Sam, between the players on the pitch and the results achieved.
It's close to it. Yeah, this is a tough transition. Dean's really sold me down the river here. But the biggest puncher award is actually my wife's addition to this conversation. I asked her for a topic for an award. I hope this isn't a personal comment on our relationship, because punching when we say punching, usually it means that one half of the relationship is significantly uglier than the other, and the uglier half is punching. So the fact that she came straight out with this is a slight concern. But what I mean by this in football terms is I try to find the biggest disparity between a player's ability and the team he plays for. So the worst player on the best team. And I'm going to go back to Raul Bellanova, who got on the pitch in a Champions League final for Inter Milan, despite being absolutely awful at football. Honestly, I really enjoyed that final until Raul Bellanova came on the pitch and I was just absolutely distraught. But it is a lesson to us all. The dream is never dead. It doesn't matter how bad you are at anything. You can still get to the absolute pinnacle of whatever industry you are in. Because if Bellanova's on that pitch trying to chase down Jack Grealish, then I think there's a future in football for all of us, lads. I think we're okay.
I mean,
that's a big call. A future in football for all of us. But yeah.
Who knows? You have to unretired.
The text.
Dean, I know you're
the
not.
The text that Sam got. I got from Sam. He was like, Raul Bellanova is on. I was like, oh God. Oh no. He's going to. I didn't even really notice it was going on. And I was like, oh no. He's going to absolutely just go off the handle about this one. So I can completely understand why he's gone for this. But yeah, definitely something. I thought you were going to go for team.
Champions League finalist.
I thought that was going to go for a team and you were going to be talking about a team that have punched above their weight and it was going to be really positive. But the fact is not.
No,
it's not. It's just a completely negative one to end Sam's tenure. Okie dokie, I'm going to end with best narrative. And I think that there have been plenty of contenders for this. You know, we've talked about Napoli already. We've talked about that the year that has been for Maradona with the World Cup going to Argentina and the Scudetto going to Napoli and Sevilla winning the UEFA Cup and Barcelona winning the La Liga title. So it's been a hell of a year for Diego Armando Maradona. Rest in peace, big man. But generally, I think that my favourite story of the season came from the final day in France in Ligue 1, where Nantes had to win. On the final day against Angers and hope that Auxerre lost to Lens. Auxerre did lose to Lens. They lost 3-1. And there was one goal in the game, the derby between Nantes and Angers. And the goal was scored by Cameroonian striker Ignatius Ganago. The only goal of the game. His only goal of the season. The goal that kept them up. And it came just 4 months after his daughter passed away from a long-term illness. And she's been absent for a lot of the season. Trying to deal with that and trying to deal with the emotional repercussions of that. But for him to come back and score the goal that kept the team up in what has been a really, really up and down season for Nantes. Obviously, they were in Europe at the start of the year and it looked like they were going to be relegated by the end of it. But I just thought that moment and the kind of feeling of catharsis around Ganago's goal and what that must have meant for him and for his family, I just felt like an incredible moment. So I thought that was the best narrative moment of the season. The moment
that's
that,
quite deep as well. Yeah. We're getting quite deep here.
Yeah, well, I just really well. Liked it two as a story. I really liked it as a story.
Sam's had no emotion in his at all.
No, this is going to become a really emotional podcast.
I just decided
podcast,
to so. Pick on someone.
Yeah, it's all love from two-thirds of this podcast. But unfortunately, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a nice story to end the season and to score the goal was amazing to keep not up. So, yeah. Good one there.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I tell you what, seeing as it's award season, I'm going to give a shout out to all the patrons who follow us every week on a Monday and a Friday, because over there we do a prediction league and it's been going on obviously all season long. And it's me, V Jack, V Sam versus the patrons. And every single week over there, one listener gets involved and chooses the match predictions for the games that we are talking about on the Friday. And it's slightly embarrassing to say, but we should probably reveal it to the wider audience today, that the patrons won the league.
By a distance as well, like not close. I've said it before, I'm only good at long-term predictions. Short-term predictions, I'm rubbish at. Long-term predictions, real good.
I think
21
Jack,
and 21
league
calls. Oh, yeah. But the bag is intact. And I've called the last two major international trophy winners in Italy and Argentina winning the tournament. So I'm starting to realise where my fortes lie, I think.
Your strengths lie. Yeah, I mean, for goodness sake, do not get a column anywhere predicting matches on a week-by-week basis, because you are not going to last very long in that contract. But by all means, you could do long-term predictions for someone, absolutely. But yeah, so seeing as it's award season, congratulations to the patrons for beating us in the prediction league. We're calling the whole thing off now. We're never doing it again, but it was good while it lasted.
Yeah, it was lots of fun. We had a good time. Everyone had a good time. Right, after the break, we have one final big award to give out. Those of you who listen regularly will know exactly what that is going to be. And of course, there's the gibberish rankings. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks AFC, where it's time for our final award of this season. And Dean Jones, the floor is yours.
It's time for Melon of the Season. This season's Melon of the Season is Todd Bowley.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
When
Heck the Bearin is out there somewhere just punching the air. He's absolutely over the moon.
Mate. What Todd Bowley has achieved in terms of melon status at Chelsea supersedes those three or four foul throws that Bellerin did over the course of a season. Todd Bowley was part of a £4.25 billion takeover at Chelsea. He spent over £600 million on players. He started the season with Thomas Tuchel there leading the charge. He ended it with Frank Lampard in the dugout. And in between, he had an absolute nightmare with Graham Potter, who put on this really long contract, was adamant he was going to see it out. They played Real Madrid in the Champions League. He predicted they'd beat them 3-0. Absolutely did not. He saw the team finish in the bottom half of the table. Like, that is truly, truly hard to do. He spent all this money. They didn't even have a goal scorer. And the only one they did have, they loaned out to Inter Milan, who got to the Champions League final. And now he's losing Kante, Kovacic, Mason Mount. The whole Chelsea identity absolutely blown to pieces. This man has achieved more in a year of turning over a football club than anyone's ever managed to do, but in the completely wrong way. Like, look, he's got a lot of money. He could probably get it back the other way quite quickly, because at the end of this summer, he's probably spent £1 billion. But Todd Bowley, for goodness sake, you are absolutely, undeniably the melon of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely isn't it? Oh, of course. I've loved it. Thank you, Todd Bowley. The best thing to happen at the bridge.
I think it's been my favourite season ever. I think it might have been my favourite season.
Right up there. Right up there.
It's up there. Yeah.
Can you genuinely think of a person in football who has done a worse job relative to their capacity, relative to their remit, than Todd Bowley? Like, no, the answer is absolutely not. He's done the worst job anyone has done in football in any capacity this season.
Max Allegri.
Taking Chelsea to 12th with 44 points. I couldn't do that if I tried.
Honestly, Sam could have been manager of Chelsea for the whole of last season and 100% finished the top half of the table. He could have just not even done anything and that team would have finished in the top half of the table. He could have been I'm just going to let Aubameyang take it from here. And he'd have done all the team talks and they'd have still finished in the top half of the table. Like, it's just absolutely outrageous how bad that season went for Chelsea. As I say, as a Fulham fan, I've obviously loved it. Never known anything like it in the entirety of my life. We even got to beat Chelsea, which is a lovely day that I'll always remember.
For any Chelsea fans listening, this is the thing. You know, I've been talking to a few of them lately and they were like, oh, you're going to rub it in? I'm like, yes, because this is going to happen again for 20 years. So, you know, probably not even then. These are rare occurrences.
And next year, the good thing for Chelsea fans is you get to bounce back from this moment. Like, it's been utter garbage, right? It's been as low as you're ever really going to get. I mean, you weren't far off being involved in a relegation battle in the end. Like, that's how bad Frank Lampard did when he came in. He almost threw you towards those relegation spots. Luckily, you just about had enough points on the board before he came in.
Shout out Tommy Tuchel, yeah.
But yeah, this is Chelsea fans. It won't go that badly again. You'll get redemption and you'll be able to probably laugh at me in a year's time.
I'll be in top four next year.
Yeah, you'll be top four and Fulham will be back in the Championship. But that's why I'm embracing this moment. You've got to enjoy your highs and your lows. Your highs in football and ride the lows.
Indeed. Indeed you do. You do. And we've got some bits and bobs to discuss with you as well. Before Sam goes into his gibberish rankings, it's probably worth pointing out that, Sam, this is going to be your last gibberish ranking for a little while. Going to be changing some things here at Ranks FC. Sam is still going to be part of the podcast. Don't you worry before you stress out too much. But just in a slightly reduced capacity. He's going on holiday, having himself a little bit of an off season for once, which is nice after the drama of the last couple of years. And then he's going to be back, Sam, but in a slightly reduced capacity.
Yeah, I'm going to have a summer off. Dean's sat there laughing at me. Like, Dean's been working the journalistic grind since he was 12, you know. So 16. He can't believe it's 14. He can't believe that. He can't believe I've got to 10 years in the industry and have decided I need a bit of time off. He's laughing away at me. But I do need a little bit of time. My request for a 3-month paid sabbatical was denied. And so I am sort of
we have any money. We literally don't have any money to pay you for a 3 month.
You can have a 3-month sabbatical on your current wages, which are naught.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one I've taken. So yeah, I'm going to have a little bit of a summer off, and then I'll return in late August or September, a little less frequently, but I'll still be part of the pod from there. But yeah, a couple of months without me. I'm sure some people are punching the air. They'd be absolutely sick of me.
I'm sure some people are punching people are punching their screens, mate. So you've got, you know, absolutely furious with this decision. But alas, these are the moments you have to do. And it feels like a good time in terms of taking a break this summer with Euros next summer, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be right back at it before you know it. So
yeah, I'm expecting a big return. This is the thing. The pressure on Sam now when he does appear on Ranks is going to be through the roof. Like, these episodes are going to, and the rankings he's going to be going through are obviously going to be like the highest caliber ever, because he's going to think of them for over the next 2 months. The notebook that you're going to have to take over your summer travels, mate, with all the little things that you're going to think of to study, not just for this podcast, but in general for ideas to write up. You're going to be, well, look, Guardiola did it. Guardiola's done it, so maybe that's what you're doing here. You just don't realise it yet.
I'm just copying him. I always am, always will be.
This is it. So desperate to be Pep Guardiola, he's even taken a sabbatical.
Who isn't desperate to be Pep Guardiola? That bit I can fundamentally get.
I want to be Jack Grealish, I told you that.
Well, yeah, don't we all. Don't we all. Right, Sam, then, for the final time for a while, let's take it away.
Wow. Oh,
going out big. That was impressive. Well done, Jack. Okay.
Come on, mate. Gibberish. What you got?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about summertime.
I thought you were going to say your worst ever episodes of
I'm going to talk about summertime in England. And I'm going to draw a parallel. I'm going to say, when it comes to summer, English people are like Olaf from Frozen. Olaf is a magical snowman who dreams of seeing summer. It's all he wants ever, and he sings an entire song in Frozen 1 about his yearning for summer, apparently not realizing that he, a snowman made of snow, will melt and die the moment summer hits. And that is us, isn't it? That is the British public, 6 to 9 months a year pining for summer, waiting for it to arrive, and then it hits. And then you can hear our cries of anguish from across the ocean. And that is because this country, frankly, and this people, not really particularly compatible with summer. And to be fair, like, in the past, it's been all right. But I invite any climate change denier to spend a week in London in June or July to realise that, yeah, no, it's getting pretty damn hot on this planet. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk through the three stages of terror that any Brit experiences as we hit summer, and it's getting worse and worse as the years go by. So step one, hay fever. Talked about this a lot recently, so I thought I'd jam it in at the end. Apparently we're all allergic to summer. That's a bad starting point, isn't it, biologically? We can't handle it. Approximately 50% of this country has hay fever. That is half of us. That's mathematics right there.
I've got it.
So yeah, we've all got it. It's ridiculous. 100% of this podcast has hay fever.
I
for those of you
type,
out and about,
so I'm okay. My one ends in April.
Oh no,
you got fine.
I've got the tree one. So I get hay fever really badly from like February to April. And then when everyone else starts to get really badly, mine just goes away. It's great.
No.
Oh, good for you. Brilliant. Well, you still went through your pain, just a different timeline.
Just different time of year.
But look, if you're listening to this, if you're listening to this and you're out and about, you know, on the tube, on the train, out and about in a park, whatever, look to the person to your left, look to the person to your right. One of them has a crippling allergy to freshly cut grass that turns them into a snivelling, snotting, shriveled mess. In a moment's instance, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And we've all been wiped out by it. We've all got different types. I just find it crazy. How has this not been fixed? How have we not sorted this out? An allergy to pollen?
Why has evolution not seen to this? Why have our bodies not adapted to the fact this happens every year? I can't understand. I didn't actually used to have hay fever. I think I've only had it about 10 years. I never used to get it. Now get it bad.
Yeah, it just onsets at some point.
I literally come downstairs in the morning and I feel it halfway down the stairs hitting me.
That's the pollen cloud that you've got.
Yeah, upstairs. The window's been left open.
I mean, so the flip side of that, Dean, is that for some people, it does just magically disappear later in life as well. Like it does. It's sometimes like people get to, like, I don't know, 46 or something, and it just disappears and never have it again.
Oh, not far off. That's good.
So something to look forward to. There you go. So step one, hay fever. We're all allergic to summer. Step two, with hay fever wreaking chaos, it's safer to go inside, right? No, that's wrong. Inside is hot. Inside is really, really, really hot. In new build houses and flats, it's basically just as hot inside as it is out. Maybe it's hotter. Because houses in England nowadays, and there are a lot of new builds because we have a lot of demand, but all three of us live in very new houses and flats. They're built to retain heat because this is a historically cold country. The whole point is that for 9 months, it's actually pretty damn cold. So you need to retain the heat. So it makes sense. For 9 months of the year, that's really valuable. But at the summer peak, it's basically a death trap. So you can't go outside because you're allergic to outside. But you can't stay inside because it's hotter than the sun. And I see the whole world laughing at us for this, guys. I do. I see it on Twitter. But they don't understand. We don't have aircon. We don't have ceiling fans. And obviously, we don't have swimming pools. We have no way to circulate air. We have no way to cool down. Once it gets to, I guess in America, it'd be like 88, 90, 92 degrees Fahrenheit. Indoors is just as bad as outdoors. Okay, you're not allergic to your house, but it is just as hot. And unbelievably, it seems like the way to combat this is to shut the windows and close the curtains. I mean, what a life. It's beautiful, beautiful day outside. We've got the curtains shut and the windows closed. And I'm huddling. Really I'm is. Huddling indoors. It's absolutely outrageous. I mean, I've cracked. I've absolutely cracked. And we've bought an aircon unit.
Yeah,
we're saying absolutely no more to this. Absolutely no more.
Mate, I think it's a great investment. You dropped this on our WhatsApp chat yesterday, and I was like, what a wise man. Like, that is...
Wise.
If you see the sort of decisions you're going to be making over the summer, mate, you are in for a really transformative stage of your life, because that is a very, very good decision. I actually am a bit annoyed that the new builds that we've all got don't actually come with air conditioning. Like, I think all houses should have the option now of air conditioning. They say, we're building your house for an extra couple of grand. Do you want us to throw some air conditioning units in there? Yes, I actually do, because that's going to be extremely helpful. The good thing about the houses we've got and the insulation and the way they're built is that my gas bill is about half the price of a lot of my friends who live in older houses. So while they've been moaning all winter about the fact their heating bill is about £400 a month, they're like, how much is yours? I'm like, oh, you don't want to know. Like, it's no one. But they're having the last laugh at the moment because this house is absolutely baking. And
three of our four fans
are broken.
I've got the same issue, but my fans are currently working. So there is that. But yes, this house traps heat like a greenhouse, especially the upstairs, which is all glass. So we're struggling with that at the moment. But alas, this is the issues that we have. These are the prices we pay.
It is indeed. And look, step three, you know, you talk about things rising there, Dean, you know, energy bills rising. That's a real concern when you're trying to run, you know, two fans every day, like not like a ceiling fan, but like a standalone fan. Like last summer, I think I ran a fan on just 24/7 next to me in bed. And then I just move it with me around the house, plug it into different outlets. But with the energy bills at the moment, you can't really do that. So rising prices and things rising is step three, really. But I actually want to key in on something a little bit more specific than energy bills preventing 24/7 fans. It's the fact that my classic reprieve here is just to have an ice cream. But even they're expensive nowadays. You've been to the supermarket recently? Bloody inflation. Unbelievable. Is it? Can anyone afford the ice cream van right now?
Mate,
I don't know.
I saw one in the Cotswolds
outside
the weekend.
School.
It didn't even stop. That's how bad, how expensive things are.
It this looked is at how you annoying. And said, you can't afford my shit.
Yeah. Okay, so if you're in America, you don't really have ice cream vans in the way that we do here, so you might have to look up if you haven't been there to see exactly what we mean by an ice cream van. It's literally a vehicle that drives around, sticks a bit of a lullaby on a loudspeaker as it drives down your road, so you know it's coming. And then it pulls over and all the kids run out of their houses screaming, we want ice cream, and you have to go and buy them one. There's one that parks outside Dylan's school every single day from like May to the end of term. And it's just so annoying because obviously they want one every time they see it. Yeah. He doesn't take card.
Nah, yeah.
Doesn't take card. I'm like, why not? Like, why not? Why would you not take card? I never, ever have cash. And he's like, oh, you do a bank transfer.
Evading
tax.
You
did a bank transfer. A bank transfer. So I'm like, £3.50 to the ice cream man.
How much does £3.50 get you?
That's for one, mate. That's
the thing, man. That's the price. That's the price. Yeah. We've just done a shop, and you know, I was looking in the freezers longingly. Look, I do like a fab, you know, and I look up, if you haven't seen a fab, you know, for those in America that don't have it, look up fab or a knobbly bobbly. They are my ice cream of choice. I genuinely can't afford these ice creams. It's like £4 for a box of four in some places right now. It's absolutely insane. So you tie in the energy prices and the lack of fans and inability to cool yourself down that way. Like, you tie in the fact that ice creams cost the earth, and you're really just having a pretty terrible time because this room is 28.9 degrees according to the thermostat. Like, it's just horrendous, isn't it? Absolutely horrendous. So long live aircon being delivered today, I think.
Last question on your aircon. Do you have to pick one room it goes in? Because my friend got one. He can't move it because it's so heavy. So you have to pick where it goes.
I didn't get a system. We got a box. We're gonna call the bedroom down.
Yeah.
Sleep is key.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah, I can understand
there at any point.
Yeah, you can always return there. So are you gonna take it to Canada?
Spend
with
my
you?
Summer in the bedroom.
Yeah.
He's got a three-floor house. He just stays in one room for 3 months.
Mate, I can buy it. I'm glad that I eat Calippos now because my Calippos are not that expensive still. You can still get Calippos for a reasonable price. So
I'm trying to get Dylan and Reese into ice pops because they're like 10p.
Oh
yeah,
they're good,
for sure.
I like
remember
them.
That, yeah.
Cola ones were always fire. That was always the answer.
The Flintstones had a Flintstones range ice pops when I was a kid. And they were fantastic. They had cola flavour, blue flavour, all sorts.
Mini milks as well. I quite like them. They were nice, but I didn't like the chocolate ones. Mini milk. They were good.
No one does.
And they're good for your calcium levels, I suppose. Probably. Don't take that as milk. Please nobody take that as gospel. I have no idea. Just as milk in it. Assumed it as gospel.
One into the season there, Jack. Exactly. Well done, mate.
I think it's probably time for us to call it a day before we go mad in this heat. And all that's left for me to do
No wonder Sam wants to leave.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much. And goodbye for now to the rank god, Mr. Sam Tai.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, lads. I'll see you
after. You have
after
to bang him
time,
out, like. Jack. Bang on something because it's Sam's offer on a summer trip. Whee.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tremendous. Go.
When you walk out of a newspaper, if you're in the industry, you get banged out. They call it. So, like, as you're walking out, everyone bangs the table, and as you walk out from your shift,
I'm so excited to see you leave, huh?
It's a bit weird. I don't know where that came from. But I have seen
but
it a few times.
Thank you, Sam, and we will see you when we see you. But enjoy your summer hiatus.
Be safe.
Get yourself relaxed, eh?
For sure. Absolutely. Take care of yourselves, lads. Have a lovely summer yourselves. I'll be listening along. You know I will be on Patreon.
Yes, we do. Yeah. We do. Indeed. He'll be there asking questions, Dean, for our transfer episodes. If you do want to get involved over on Patreon for those Blitz transfer episodes, the link is in the description to this podcast. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening all season long and today in particular. We have loads of really exciting stuff lined up over the summer. Some rotating guests coming in to try and fill the void that Sam is leaving behind for the summer. And we've got some really cool people lined up to get in on Ranks FC. So make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you're locked in this summer as we deal with all the big stories across international football, the leagues coming back and transfer news as well. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you very shortly, gang. Take it easy. Peace.